I'd like to welcome folks to the Senate State Affairs Committee. Let the record reflect that it is Tuesday, March 12th at 3:30 p.m. We are in the capital city of Juneau in the Belts Committee Room, and it is 3:30 p.m. Members present today are Senators Clayman and Senator Bjorkman, myself, Chair Kawasaki. We do have a quorum to conduct business. I'd like to thank Sav Danbert from Senate Records for being here, as well as Shelby Carroll, moderator with the Legislative Information Office. Today we have two bills before us. We have the second hearing and public testimony for Senate Bill 131, Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, or program, sponsored by Senator L.V. Gray Jackson. We have a first hearing on Senate Bill 193, Sexual Assault Examination Kits and Tracking, by the Rules Committee by request of the governor. We're going to go ahead and take up first Senate Bill 131, and then I will see if there's a motion. Welcome, Senator L.V. Gray Jackson, to the committee. Do you have any comments you'd like to make?
Thank you. This is Senator Gray Jackson, representing District G in Anchorage. And first, I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the committee members for hearing the bill the first time and hearing it again today. And just to refresh everyone's memory, the bill is basically a bill to include Asian American Pacific Islander history and their contributions in schools K through 12. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Mrs. Gray Jackson. We will now open this up to public testimony. I think we do have one person who signed up here in the room. We have Gladys Anderson, who's sitting in the room. If you'd like to come forward and state your name and your affiliation for the record. And welcome to the Senate State Affairs Committee today.
Chair Kawasaki and members of the committee, thank you for your time and this opportunity to provide testimony on Senate Bill 131, an act requiring education in the history and contribution of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. My name is Gladys Anderson and a resident of the Juneau Borough. I am testifying on behalf of myself and as part of the community, Filipino community here in Juneau. I am impressed with the organization and its backbone in supporting a close-knit and wonderful community to reach out and be available to Juneau and beyond. I believe that teaching the Asian American and Pacific Islander history and culture is important because of our contributions, specifically here in Alaska. I wouldn't have known about this book, Filipinos in Alaska, 1788 to 1958, if I didn't join the Filipino community. There are many contributions, not just from my countrymen, but by many Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders have poured in our state. This is urgent to me because it would help our children and future learners to expand and enhance the history, culture, and accounts of the Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, allowing us to be visible in our beautiful state of Alaska. Thank you for your consideration.
Great. Thank you very much, Gladys, for being here this afternoon. I wanted to recognize that we have Senator Wilikowski here. Do we have any questions? Okay. Seeing and hearing none, we will go off net for public testimony. We have Shane Nueska out of Anchorage. If you could just state your name and your affiliation for the record.
Thank you. Chair Kawasaki, members of the committee, thank you for your time and this opportunity to give testimony on SB 131. My name is Shane Nueska, and I've been a resident of Anchorage, Alaska for 27 years, raised in the Spinard and Sand Lake neighborhoods. I'm a parent, former journalist, and now a historian. I serve as the interim director of Make Us Visible Alaska, a coalition working to help bring Asian American and Pacific Islander history education to Alaska K-12 schools. Today, I'm proudly voicing my support for SB 131. This bill is deeply personal to me. At 6 years old, my mother, brother, and I emigrated to the United States from the Philippines. There weren't many material belongings we could take with us, but I was able to bring a set of encyclopedias. As a child, I would eagerly flip through the pages, searching for references to the Philippines and Filipinos. I didn't realize it then, but I was desperately seeking representation. Now, through my work documenting the history of Filipinos in Alaska, reflecting on my journey, and connecting with students who, like me, emigrated to this country, I see the profound impact of seeing yourself in the books you read, the media you consume, and the education you receive. Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders are the fastest growing group in Alaska. SB 131 is not just about teaching history, it's about validating the experiences of students who deserve to feel seen. I want my children, and all children, to be empowered by the stories of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders who have made historical contributions to our state and to our country. SB 131 is also a matter of public safety. As a child, groups of students taunted me for just being who I am. In one instance, when I was in seventh grade, a classmate followed me into my school bus to intimidate me, and I feared for my safety so much that for years afterward, I'd make sure no one would see me get on the bus. It's my hope that the generation after me won't experience this. By teaching students about the rich contributions of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, we lay the foundation for a more inclusive and empathetic society. Please vote SB 131 out of the State Affairs Committee with haste. This bill ensures that future generations of students have the representation they need to feel a sense of belonging and pride in their heritage. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Shane, for your testimony this afternoon. Are there any questions? Don't see any questions. Thank you very much once again. With that, we will go ahead and close public testimony. I will look to the will of the committee. Senator Klayman.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 131 work draft 33-LS0769/A as in alpha be reported out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Great. Are there any objections? Hearing none, Senate Bill 131 work draft 33-LS0769/A is moved, reported out of committee with individual recommendations in the attached fiscal note. We will take a brief break to sign the bill paperwork. Thank you. I'd like to call the Senate State Affairs Committee meeting back to order. We now have before us Senate Bill 193 relating to sexual assault examination kits and tracking. We have with us, we have two people before us. We have Mr. David Canaris, the Forensic Science Laboratory Chief from the Alaska State Crime Lab in the Department of Public Safety. We also have Commissioner James Cockerell, Commissioner, Department of Public Safety, for questions. Welcome to the committee. Please come forward.
For the record, my name is David Canaris. I'm the Forensic Laboratory Chief with the Alaska Scientific Crime Detection Lab under the Department of Public Safety, located in Anchorage. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you this afternoon on Senate Bill 193, Sexual Assault Kit Tracking. This bill seeks to mandate that all criminal justice system stakeholders participate in the sexual assault kit tracking system that the Department of Public Safety has provided. It provides timeframes for all criminal justice system stakeholders in line with the existing timeframes for law enforcement and for the crime lab to examine those kits. It removes the need for law enforcement agencies to report proactively on any untested kits in their possession. That will now be done through the kit tracking system. And perhaps most importantly, it provides for victims that they have an access route to track the progress of their kit through the criminal justice system. Okay. There we go. I got it. So as I mentioned, I'll jump to the second bullet point. This bill mandates the use of the sexual assault kit tracking system for law enforcement, medical providers, and the crime lab. In fact, all stakeholders from the suppliers of the sexual assault kits right the way through to the crime lab testing the kit. Everyone should be participating in this. It requires that healthcare providers notify law enforcement within 7 days that a sexual assault examination kit is ready to be picked up by law enforcement. This is a piece that's missing in the current legislation, whereas the current legislation specifies that law enforcement will send the kit to the lab within 30 days and the crime lab will test the kit within 6 months. The piece that was missing is how long do medical providers have to notify law enforcement the kit is ready to be picked up. It also provides victims access to the sexual assault kit tracking system. It allows them to opt into and out of email or text notifications when their kit changes status. As I mentioned, this is a bill for victims primarily. It does many different things. The main part of this is it provides victims to have an online portal where they can go into the kit tracking system and follow along the progress of their kit without having to re-engage with law enforcement. During the development of this kit tracking system, we met with victims advocates, victim survivors groups, and one thing that was resoundingly clear was that the need to listen to their feedback and to hear how traumatic this process can be after undergoing a really nasty assaults in many instances. These victims are usually traumatized and to then have to re-engage with law enforcement to find out if they've sent the kit to us or if we've tested the kit. It is reopening that trauma. And so one of the benefits of this system is that they can go into the system and track the progress themselves. They can do that either proactively by following along with their kit, or they can get email and text notifications when their kit moves along to the lab or when the lab finishes their testing. The other really nice feature of this kit tracking system is that there are resources built into the system, regionalized for each of the different locations in Anchorage. So if a victim survivor doesn't know which advocacy groups work in that area or what support groups are there, they can log in and see a bunch of resources. In the future, we're looking at customizations to allow the system to be fully translated into all of the major languages. Why is this bill needed? It increases the transparency of the whole process. In order to make data-informed decisions, you need to have data to do that. And this system has really opened up the ability to do that. Now that we can look in and check on the progress, how long a medical provider is taking, how long is law enforcement taking, how long is the lab taking. Now we understand all of those parameters, we can make the best decisions about policy. It requires timeliness for all of the different stakeholders. And so it hopefully provides that none of these kits are sat out there not being tested for any length of time. And it also repeals the duplicative work of having to ask law enforcement agencies to report to us any untested kits that they may have, because we can actually go into the system and do that proactively ourselves. That's it for the presentation. I'm available for questions.
Super. Thank you, Mr. Canaris. And thank you, Commissioner, for being here. I do have a question. I'm just looking at the fiscal note, and it does look like there is, it's actually something that specifically is cited as a sexual assault kit tracking system under Invita Healthcare Technologies. Can you tell me a little bit more about that company? I'm just not sure really what, I'm just not familiar with the company.
Jay Kawasaki, yes, this is, I should have mentioned, this is a system that's already established. So we used federal grant funds to stand up the program and to purchase the software. There are a few different manufacturers, off-the-shelf software systems that do this kind of work. Through a competitive bid process, we selected a manufacturer and software company to go with. And so this provides for the ongoing maintenance fees of this system.
And Mr. Canaris, can you tell me a little bit more about access to this technology? Is it something, I know we've talked about a portal being accessible by, for instance, the patient or the person themselves, maybe law enforcement, and then other people who are working on behalf in the DV world. How accessible is it outside of that? And is it secure? Is it password protected and all that? Of course, we've heard about the 23andMe, 7 million people being accessed by somebody. Just wanted to make sure about security protocol in place.
Absolutely. Chair Kawasaki, two things. This is a system, so when the kit is collected from the victim survivor, they're given a code to get in. And so the victim can share that code with advocates, and they can have that information. The other part of this is there's no personal identifying information in the system. So it is just anonymized. They would just have the code for their kit, and they would be able to follow along and see where that kit is in the system. None of the results of the testing are going to go into this system. It's just a notification that the testing has been completed or that the kit has been submitted to the lab.
And then just to follow up on that question, you are, I guess law enforcement would know who is attached to that particular number and code then. That's how you would identify, or the courts would have to know. So who all would know what that unique identifier would be besides?
Jake Kawasaki, yes, it's this two separate processes. And so the kit is going to come into the lab, and we're going to test the kit, and we're going to issue a laboratory report, which is going to have all the information pertinent to that investigation. That's going to then go to law enforcement and potentially onto the prosecutorial agencies. That's completely separate from the kit tracking system. So in the kit tracking system, only the person who has the kit tracking number will be able to track their own kit and potentially administrators within the lab.
Okay. I might have another question, but Senator Clayman has a question.
Just a couple of questions. I'm pretty sure I understand the general structure. Right now, the only place that's doing the testing is our crime lab. Is that right?
Yes. Senator Clayman, through the chair, that's correct. The crime lab in Alaska that is testing.
And so what the bill would allow, to the extent you wanted to affiliate with some other lab to do testing on your behalf, that would be allowed. But as of today, the expectation is all the testing is done at the lab.
Senator Clayman, through the chair, that's correct. Yeah, our expectation is we don't have any desire to outsource any of this testing work in the future.
And then I could have looked this up myself. I came before. In Section 6, there's a Section 44.410708 is repealed. What is being repealed, if you know?
Senator Clayman, through the chair, I believe this is the sexual assault kit inventory. So this is an annual report that we do every year. The way it's been done in the past is we will solicit information from all of the participating law enforcement agencies in the state to actively get them to tell us how many untested kits are sat with law enforcement to prevent any problems like we've seen in the past with kits not being submitted into the lab. Because the kit is all-encompassing and everyone should be using the kit tracking system, there would be no need for them to do that we can just go into the system and view how many kits are in a status of currently with law enforcement but not submitted to the lab.
And I think maybe one last thought. So the idea would be, instead of this report that we used to still see that reflect the number of untested kits, the idea that with this new system, you can basically get that picture any given day about what's tested and what's not tested, and then you're adding to this the requirement to test within 6 months. So in theory, we should never develop a backlog.
Senator Kleeman, through the chair. Yes, we've already had that in statute for a while about the 6 month turnaround time for sexual assault kits. And yes, this is totally designed to prevent a backlog in the future. It doesn't repeal the need for us to do the inventory report. We'll still do that. What it's taking out is the need for law enforcement to then go and tell us that information.
Thank you.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Let's see. I got one more follow up question on this. On this organization that does this tracking system in VITA, do they sell any of the data that they receive to other agencies or other groups, or is it very, very private?
Chair Kawasaki, we've vetted this organization through our IT department, and they were content with that no data sharing was going to go on. It's also an organization that is kind of an industry leader, and they work with many other labs and other states to also provide this. I can get a definitive answer to that question, but to the best of my knowledge, there's no data sharing that's going on.
No, thank you very much. Let's see if there's any other questions. Yes, Senator Wilikowski.
I want to clarify a question that Senator Kleeman asked on where these tests are being performed. Are they all being performed at the crime lab in Anchorage?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, yes, they are currently all being performed at the crime lab in Anchorage.
Yep. Go ahead, Senator Wilikowski.
Would there be an objection to just clarifying that it will be an in-state laboratory so that they're not shipped? Because we spent $100 million on this crime lab. I would hate to have it shipped out somewhere else where we're paying probably even more money than what we paid for that crime lab.
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair. The only scenario I can envisage is if we were to lose a number of staff and we were unable to perform this testing within the time frame specified, or if the technology developed at a rate faster than we were able to keep up with it. And so if the test, say that a new DNA technique was brought online that allowed for more specificity that a private outsource company was able to provide that we weren't able to provide, it would typically take us a year to 18 months to stand up a new service and validate the instrumentation and purchase and everything else. And so that would be a discussion with department leadership to determine if we needed to outsource at that time. But the intent is to never outsource another kit.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's see if there's any other questions before we go to public testimony.
Just a follow-up.
Yeah, go ahead, Senator Kleeman.
Senator Wilikowski's question. If the legislature were to take the view that we actually wanted to prioritize keeping the testing being done in Alaska and keep jobs in Alaska, if we added an amendment saying that accredited laboratory in Alaska, that would essentially mean either it's done at the crime lab or if we're not doing it here, we have to get it in Alaska if we'll have to do it. We couldn't start sending all our tests to, say, Seattle to do them in the lab there if we made a modification where, under the current language, if circumstances arose that the better testing could be done in Seattle, you could start sending all the tests to Seattle. Would be allowed under the current language of the statute. Am I right about that?
Senator Kleeman, through the chair, if I understand the question correctly, I believe so. Yeah, I need to reread the language in there to confirm that, but yes, I think so.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for the presentation. I'll go ahead and next open up public testimony on Senate Bill 193. We have, looks like, is there anybody in the room like to testify on Senate Bill 193? Seeing and hearing none, we have one person off net. We have Ms. Tara Henry out of Anchorage. If you could just state your name and affiliation for the record, and welcome to the committee.
Hi, yes, thank you. My name is Tara Henry, and I am a forensic nurse. I've been providing health care for victims of sexual and physical assault for the past 27 years here in Anchorage. Thank you for allowing me to be heard today. I will try to be brief so you have time to ask me questions. So SB 193, as currently proposed, that mandates a healthcare provider notify law enforcement within 7 days of collecting the sexual assault evidence collection kit will have unintended negative consequences that I'd like for you to know about. This 7-day deadline was chosen without talking to the healthcare agencies in Alaska that it will affect. The forensic nurses and other healthcare providers in our state always strive to have the sexual assault evidence collection kits ready for law enforcement to pick up as quickly as possible. However, given the diverse types of forensic nursing programs around the state and the extensive charting and documentation that is required for these medical forensic examinations, it is very difficult to always meet a 7-day deadline for releasing these kits to law enforcement, especially those forensic nursing programs who have high volume, high acuity patients. The average patient length of stay for a medical forensic exam is 4 to 6 hours. After the patient is discharged, the forensic nurse then has 1 to 2 hours of lab processing and forensic sample packaging. After that, it can take 4 to 6 hours to complete the 60-plus pages of documentation, plus additional time for all of the quality assurance reviews on the chart, labs, and kit that are completed to ensure a comprehensive quality medical forensic record of that patient's episode of care. To always meet this 7-day deadline, we would have to force forensic nursing staff to come in on their days off between their scheduled shifts. Financially, this burdens the hospitals with overtime costs. From a personnel perspective, the additional stress on an already strained forensic nursing staff will increase burnout and lead to even more forensic nurse staffing shortages than we're already dealing with statewide. Not to mention, for hospitals with union-represented nurses, the potential union grievances they may face in attempting to force forensic nurses to work over 14-hour days, shifts, or to work on their days off in order to ensure compliance with this 7-day deadline when we are overburdened with high case volume. There is not any funding associated with this legislation that would be given to forensic nursing programs and hospitals to fund their overtime costs or to fund additional staff costs that would be incurred. Alaska just began using the TRACKIT system in June and July of 2023. The Crime Lab has not provided our forensic nursing programs with any preliminary statistical analysis of our data for review. It is unreasonable to legislate a time frame for healthcare providers in Alaska without the forensic nursing programs knowing our own statewide data or without meeting with the leadership representatives from the hospitals and forensic nursing programs in Alaska to discuss best practices for our healthcare providers in our own state. Legislating this deadline for our healthcare providers without sufficient Alaska-based data and discussions with the hospitals and forensic nursing programs who provide these medical forensic exams for victims will set us up for failure and negatively impact these critical healthcare services that are being provided for sexual assault victims. The concept of a submission deadline for healthcare providers is certainly appropriate. However, this 7-day deadline for healthcare providers to release the kit to law enforcement should be tabled until the next legislative session in 2025 to give us the time to analyze at least a year's worth of data on how long it's taking healthcare providers to release the kits to law enforcement and have meetings with those forensic nursing programs to determine the best practice and reasonably obtainable deadline for healthcare providers in Alaska that would not be detrimental to the hospital's forensic nursing programs that provide these important services to victims of sexual assault.
Great, thank you. We have a couple questions for you, Ms. Henry. We have Senator Klayman first.
Thank you very much for your testimony. First, today, can you give us an idea what you think would, if 7 days is not reasonable, do you have an idea what would be reasonable?
Yeah, I mean, anecdotally, I mean, I'm the manager of forensic nursing services in Providence, so we are, you know, the largest forensic nursing program in the state. And I would say that it's probably going to be closer to a minimum of 10 days, 14 days max, but probably closer to like 10 days to be able to meet a deadline. Most of the time, you know, if you have a nurse who finishes up a case and they are gone for several days for their day off, they won't be able to finalize packaging up that kid and finalize all the charting and that kind of thing until they return unless we force them to come in on their days off. So we would need at least a 7-day window in case that's how long they have between their, you know, their shifts when they go to return. If they work their 3 12-hour shifts and then they're off for, you know, 4 to 7 days before they would return. So I'm going to say that it will be closer to 10 days would be more appropriate is what I would guess the data is going to show.
Yep. Follow up, Senator Klayman.
And I know this is getting a little bit into the complicated dynamics of law versus regulations, but if you're concerned about being able to have your department and other providers in the state communicate and work out what is a reasonable timeline with Department of Public Safety, would it be an acceptable path for us to, rather than specify in statute that timeline, instead put in statute that the department shall work with providers and issue regulations that reflect that timeline, which would, if we essentially said make it a regulation rather than a statute, that would give more flexibility both in terms of the research that's needed now before figuring out a deadline. But if that deadline doesn't work, you wouldn't have to come back to the legislature, and you could modify the regulations so that you're not putting providers at risk. Is at least what I see in this legislation. This seems like really good legislation. I also don't want to start creating all kinds of problems, as you described in the industry side and doing these kits. So that's my second question: is if we made this a regulatory matter rather than a statute, would that work from your perspective?
Senator Klayman, through the chair, I think that would be a more appropriate than as it's currently written with a legislator, just automatically picking 7 days. I think it would be better for a regulation and having public safety, looking at data for a year and coming back and talking to the healthcare providers that are the key stakeholders in this.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Henry. We have another question from Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. A couple questions. The first one is just regarding page 1, line 6 of the bill. It says, when a sexual assault examination kit is used to gather evidence, when a healthcare provider is using a sexual assault kit, is it for the purpose of gathering evidence, or is it for some other purpose?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, the sexual assault evidence collection kit itself is specific for gathering forensic samples from the reported sexual assault. So there, there's a full medical forensic, a medical evaluation that takes place, and then the sexual assault evidence collection kit. We go through and collect swabs from different areas of the body that, based on the history that the patient has reported to us, happened, where we as the forensic nurses think that they're most likely to find DNA evidence from the skin or from body orifices, those types of things. And we use the swabs to collect that, and then we package it in that sexual assault evidence collection kit. Everything in the kit is specific for forensic sample collection, medical swabs for other types of testing, lab, medical needs. Those kind of things are not part of that sexual assault evidence collection kit.
Yeah, Senator Wilikowski.
And I don't see a definition of sexual assault examination kit, but is there a standard kit that you're provided by the Department of Public Safety or by some other organization?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, yes. The state crime lab, Department of Public Safety and the state crime lab have a sexual assault evidence collection kit that they provide to all of the healthcare providers. And so when we need kits, in this new TRACKIT system, the way it works is our PAR levels or our level of kits that, they look at how many we go through every month, and when it gets to a certain level, then it auto orders from the crime lab, and then the crime lab will notify us that those kits are ready for pickup. and we will then go pick up those kits from the crime lab and store them. We can store, at our facility, we can store 100 kits, and so we need to do orders about every 3 months or so, sometimes every 2 months, but it just depends on how much storage you have.
Yep, Senator Wilikowski.
Do you have any idea how many sexual assault examination kits are used to gather evidence in the state on a yearly basis by healthcare providers?
Senator Wilikowski, yeah, sir. Through the chair, I don't know what our statewide numbers of evidence collection kits are. I could speak to Anchorage, which are can range anywhere from 300 plus in the Anchorage sexual assault forensic nursing program. But I don't know what our poll statewide data is. The crime lab may be able to report to you how many kits that they receive in statewide.
Is that per year, 300 plus per year out of Anchorage?
Yes.
Okay. And we do have Chief Canaris here. Were you able to answer that question, perhaps?
Jake Kawasaki. Yes. We receive around 400 to 450 sexual assault kits per year. But I should make a distinction here that not every sexual assault case will result in a kit. If the evidence in the case doesn't come from the victim themselves, if there's bedding or clothing or other evidence in the case, we would still receive that evidence and test that evidence. So we receive around 600 to 650 sexual assault cases requesting DNA analysis per year. But that, when you pare it down to just victim sexual assault kits, that's between 400 and 450.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Canaris, for the clarification. Ms. Henry, if you're still there, I do have another question. I'm actually familiar with it because I used to work in a hospital emergency room, so I knew when we would call out for a SART nurse that there was somebody on call. But I guess, can you just sort of explain for the rest of the folks who might be listening what's typically you're on, like a 12 hour shift, three times a week, or maybe twice a week, how that works out, and why I think most people are thinking of 8 hour days, 5 days a week. And then on top of that, I know that we, even with law enforcement, we will be potentially called in during a daytime to work, to be a trial. So that's another situation. Can you just talk a little bit about your situation as a nurse?
Sure, to the chair. So it depends on which community you're looking at. So in Anchorage, we have full-time staff and registry staff. So we have nurses who work 3 days a week, 12-hour shifts, sometimes, more hours than that if they have to do overtime. But the typical shift is three 12-hour shifts. And then we have registry staff that supplement where they are on call and they're called in on a case and they have a certain number of shifts that they have to do a month in order to come in on that. Other programs, the bulk of the rest of the state, they might have one nurse who is assigned to their forensic nursing program. And sometimes they have, they may be part-time or full-time, so working one or two days or a week. But the vast majority of forensic nursing programs in rural communities work full-time jobs elsewhere. So they may work their 7-12-hour shifts in the ER, and then they take on-call shifts for the forensic nursing program on top of those shifts. And so on their days off from their full-time job, they then will pick up whatever number of call shifts that they're able to do in that community. So they're essentially working two jobs in order to be able to provide this service. So it really depends on the community that they're in, Sometimes they are the only provider for in that community. There are no other forensic nurses other than that one forensic nurse. So if they go on vacation or they're sick or they're not able to come in on a case, then that victim is flown into Anchorage, and then we would do the exam. Or they're driven in if it's from Matsu Valley or, you know, Soldotna or wherever the nearest program is. They may only have one or two forensic nurses available. And if they move, then they wouldn't have any available until they hired somebody else. And so we would get the overflow in Anchorage for those programs. So each program is set up a little bit differently around the state depending on volume and staffing ability.
Great. Thank you very much, Ms. Henry. Are there any further? Yeah, we have one. We have another question from Senator Bjork.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Henry, thank you for joining us today. Thank you for the explanation a little bit about your staff. Is there ever a time where you're forced to mandate those forensic nurses now?
Senator Bjork, through the chair, no, we are not, we don't mandate them to come in and work overtime. The only time they have to do that is if they are in the middle of an examination at the time of change of shift, and they can't just leave that, they can't just turn it over to that patient over to another nurse if they're in the middle of the exam. So that would be the only time that they would have to be mandated to stay beyond their 12 hours to finish that patient. So they might have to work a 14-hour shift or something like that. But otherwise, they are not mandated to come in on their days off or on overtime. They're asked if they're able to try to finish up charting, then they can, but we can't force them to do that at this point.
Go ahead, Senator Bjorkman.
Are there ever times where your hospital mandates nurses to come in?
Senator Bjorkman, through the chair, not for forensic nursing services of Providence, no.
Senator Bjorkman.
Are there ever times for other nursing that you do at Providence where you mandate nurses to come in?
Senator Bjorkman, through the chair, if there was an emergency, like an emergency, they may try to do that. But unless you're already on call, we cannot force a nurse to come in on their days off to work.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Henry. I appreciate you being online, being able to testify with some knowledge. Thank you for your service. There don't seem to be any further questions for you, so we will go back to public testimony. Here in the room, we have Lori Morton. Lori is with the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence Sexual Assault. If you would like to come forward, and if you could briefly vacate those seats. Thank you.
Good morning. I hope I'm speaking clearly enough. I just had oral surgery a couple days ago. My name is Lori Morton. I'm the Deputy Director of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. We support Senate Bill 193, particularly the requirement to allow the victim from whom the kit was gathered to access the information associated with the kit and to receive automatic notifications of the status of the kit. This is a great stride forward in providing victim-centered responses throughout the criminal justice system. It's been a long time coming. In the late 1990s, Alaska embraced the Sexual Assault Response Team, or SART model, employed today, a coordinated effort to reduce further traumatization to the person who's been sexually assaulted. Advocates, officers, and nurses working together to ensure victims know their rights and choices and are interviewed and examined in ways in which their needs are given priority. A great stride forward to how victims are treated. Until 2000, healthcare facilities in Alaska were charging victims for the rape exam kits. I remember testifying about evidence collection back then. Placing in statute a prohibition against charging victims was a great stride forward. A few years ago, the legislature realized Alaska, like many states, was far behind in processing the kits and took steps to bring current testing for kits that for too long just sat on shelves. Another great stride. As a next step, there was also legislation to require law enforcement to notify victims when the kit was tested. Now, Senate Bill 193 sets in place a tracking system and requires access for victims so they can follow the progress of the kit from initial collection through testing. Are we nearing the finish line? Are we doing everything possible to ensure someone who's been sexually assaulted is treated with dignity and respect, is able to make choices for if, how, or when to interact with the system, is able to get the support they need when they need it? I hope so. We do have a suggestion for a couple of additional steps. Add the right to know the testing date and location of their sexual examination kit to the Crime Victims' Rights Statute, AS 1261-010, and then ensure victims are made aware of their right by amending AS 1865-865C to include the testing date and location of the sexual assault exam kit into the notice that DPS makes available to all law enforcement agencies to distribute to victims when a peace officer investigates a sexual assault offense. While we believe Senate Bill 193 in its current form is a great stride forward, there is room for further advance. Thank you for taking testimony today, and we ask for your favorable consideration of the bill. And I'm happy to answer questions.
Great. Thank you very much, Ms. Morton. We have a question from Senator Clayman.
Can you repeat the sections you referenced that you think need further amendment?
Yes. The Crime Victims' Rights Statute, which is AS 1261-010, there are 15 enumerated crime victim rights in that statute. This would be adding a number 16, that victims have the right to their information of their sexual assault exam kits. And AS 1865-865C, which is a statute that requires the Department of Public Safety to create a notice that they give out to all law enforcement agencies across the state, which peace officers are required to give to victims of sexual assault or stalking, that provides a notice of all their rights.
And follow up?
Yep. Go ahead, Senator Clayman.
In a written form that you could submit? Or can they're not written yet? Could you?
I do. They are.
Could you condense them into a letter and submit them to the committee?
Oh, okay, sure.
Thank you, Senator Clayman. And I actually forgot to ask Tara Henry the same thing. If she could put that in writing, that would be really helpful for the committee. I don't know that she's actually, she might be listening. But are there any further questions of Director Morton? Okay, seeing and hearing none, we will for now close public testimony. I wanted to let folks know online who may be listening that you can always send public testimony to this committee. The committee address, email address is senatestateaffairs@akleg.gov. That is senatestateaffairs@akleg.gov. And if you send it to the office, it will be put into the record and will go to all members of this committee to help improve the bill. Let's see if there's any further questions, or actually if we want to just bring the folks back up before we set the bill aside. We have Mr. Canaris, the chief of the Forensic Science Labs, and Commissioner Cockrell. Are there any last questions for these folks? Any comments, gentlemen?
Yes, for the record, this is David Canaris, Chief of the Crime Lab. I did want to respond to a few points about how we came to a 7-day turnaround time for medical providers. We worked in concert with the statewide forensic nurse practitioner training coordinator to come up with a 7-day turnaround time. It's kind of based on best practices by the National Institute of Justice. So they issued a report saying that the best practice would be to do this within 24 to 48 hours. We recognize that that's not always possible within Alaska and its constraints, especially rurally. And so in working with the statewide forensic nurse practitioner trainer, 7 days was derived to be what we would work towards. That was trained. So our program coordinator over the sexual assault kit tracking software, along with this statewide forensic nurse practitioner trainer, went all the way around the state. They trained over 700 participants in 145 training sessions to do this in 7 days. The good news is, based on the first 6 months of data, is that most agencies are meeting that already. So the turnaround time based on the 250-something kits in the first 6 months is, the average is under 7 days, it's 6.8 days. So there is some good news there. There's also some bad news. There's quite the range on turnaround times. So there are kits that are sitting out there for over 20 days, over 30 days, some that are over 60 days, which is extremely concerning to us and why we felt the need to actually put a turnaround time in there. Looking at what other state statutes do, there are 32 states that have a sexual assault kit tracking system. Of those 14, mandate a turnaround time for law for medical providers. Of those 14, the most consistent, most frequently used turnaround time is 24 hours, some as low as 4 hours, only one at the 7-day mark.
Great. Do you have a question? Are there any further questions? Can you restate that? I think you said something about 6.8 days was the average.
Correct,
that from is the average. Then that would be from a medical provider to law enforcement.
Chair Kawasaki, this is from the medical provider to notify law enforcement that the kit is available to be picked up. So not for the kit to be collected. So we're only counting the turnaround time from the first available point that the agency can do something with it. So the medical provider's turnaround time goes from when they collect the kit to when they notify law enforcement. Law enforcement's turnaround time goes from when they are notified that it is available to when they submit it to the lab. And the lab turnaround time goes from when they receive the kit into the lab until the testing is complete.
6.8 days. Thank you. Senator Wilikowski.
For that 6.8 average turnaround, is that mean or median?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, that is the mean turnaround time. The median turnaround time is a lot less. I believe it's two days.
Okay. Yeah, we have a question, Senator Klayman.
In the current statute, I'm looking at 44.41.065A1, it currently says within 30 days after they collect the salt, send it to the accredited laboratory or to the DPS lab. And I'm just trying to square up the current statute that says send it in 30 days, and this would move that 30 days to 7 days.
Senator Klayman, through the chair, this is 7 days for the medical provider and then 30 days for law enforcement. So in the current statute, there's no requirement for medical providers, only for the law enforcement and for the crime lab.
Right. And I'll ask you the same question I asked the woman testifying from Providence. From the department's perspective, if instead of trying to put this in statute, we just tell you write regulations that are reasonable and work with medical providers, does that work for you all, or do you really want it in statute?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge the work that our forensic nurses do in investigating or collecting evidence in sexual assault kits, because certainly law enforcement couldn't do their job without their dedication and hard work. And we're pretty fortunate to have a very experienced staff of nurses around the state. So I just want to thank her, and certainly we were listening to her comments. And before I get to your question, I'd also like to point out how much progress we've made in a short period of time, from clearing up hundreds of sexual assault kits that were sitting in people's law enforcement locker rooms for many, many years. Now all sex assault kits are processed and they're kept at the state crime lab, where we don't lose them. So the state, with the help of certainly the legislature and in the current administration, has really been on the forefront of trying to stay on top of a very sensitive, very important, very violating felony level offense. So I do want to point that out. The state or the department in the lab has done, I think, a really good job of focusing on that effort. But to your question on regulations versus statutes, I guess I really don't have an opinion on it. My preference is to continue where we're going with the pace here. We were just at the House. They're going through the same process we are here. And I think we have momentum at this level. I prefer to be a statute, I guess, versus regulation. But if that's the desire of the Senate, we certainly will entertain that.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Senator Klayman. Are there further questions before we set Senate Bill 193 aside? Okay. Hearing none, we'll set Senate Bill 193 aside for a future hearing. I want to thank you again, Commissioner, for being here. Thank you, Mr. Canaris, the Chief of the Forensic Science Lab here at the State Crime Labs. That concludes today's meeting of the Senate State Affairs Committee. The Senate State Affairs Committee will be meeting on Thursday, March 14th, where we will be hearing bills previously heard. With that, at this time, we will the Senate State Affairs Committee will adjourn. The time now is 4:30 p.m.